This is about censorship, political correctness, and the censure and censoring that we do to one another and to ourselves, which I think is very dangerous and unsettling. One of the great figures of the 20th century asked the deep philosophical question, can we talk? Now, Joan Rivers is one of the great figures. It's enhanced by plastic and surgery, but still, the question, can we talk, is important, and it's actually a real question indeed. Can we talk about things that are important? Do we have the maturity for levity? Do we have the maturity to listen to what people mean and intend instead of just looking at the words, just looking at the surface, but to really have an attitude of generosity that lets us at least attempt in good faith to communicate with each other across the vast, really vast chasms of understanding and misunderstanding. As somebody that talks all the time, believe me, I have a very great sense of how difficult it is to communicate and how virtually everybody in some way hears a different sermon from what I intend, from what gets to my mouth, what gets to the ears, and what gets filtered. I am sometimes amazed by what I seem to have said that was inartful on my part or simply misconstrued. And I hope that I am heard with the generosity with which I try to hear people. But it's very difficult stuff to try to communicate, because words are packed with all kinds of meaning and all kinds of baggage, way beyond what their definitions in the dictionary may be or what we think we're saying. Let me give you an example, not from words, but actually from music. It was interesting that we sang the Gedankens in Frei today. It's a nice free thinker song that has a long history. But there used to be a hymn, and it may still be there, in the Unitarian Universalist hymnal that was to the melody of Deutschland, Deutschland, über alles. After World War II, that's really hard to listen to and really hard to sing, but it's a beautiful melody. Haydn, when he went to write it, wasn't writing a march, wasn't writing Deutschland, Deutschland, über alles. He was writing something that was beautiful. Objectively, looking at his intent and at the music, it's gorgeous stuff. I can't sing it. And the first time I heard it in the Unitarian, my Unitarian church in Studio City, I cringed and I went to the choir director, and I have never, ever been directive to a choir director, as Judy will tell you, and I said, I don't want to hear that one again, not on my watch. Because it had picked up baggage beyond the intentionality. And Light of Ages and of Nations.
But we always sing
180. Yeah, we now have an alternate melody because people were fainting and walking out. And it's hard to do both of those things at the same time. And it's really disheartening when I see somebody who's able to do that from up here. So it picks up baggage. If melodies can pick up baggage, think about words and think about what we try to communicate to each other across issues of race and ethnicity and religion. And how ungenerous our society has become in just looking at the words and not the intentionality. One of the great ironies of Lenny Bruce and his career was that Lenny Bruce made it safe for vulgarity. So we can curse, we can be vulgar, we can blaspheme, and I love that, it's a great word, we can blaspheme, we can do all of those things but we dasn't, another good word, we dasn't offend a protected class, the protected class of gender, affectional preference, race, religion, ethnicity, the only physical characteristics, handicap. The only handicap we are allowed to mock is my singing, which seems highly unfair to me, but that's the way society is. Now, this is not a sermon that is encouraging us to be insensitive to each other's needs. It is one to encourage us to be careful without being cowardly, because it's important that we be able to speak about those subjects that often keep us apart, that are some of the most important and challenging issues in our society. I firmly believe that those things that we cannot talk about, we cannot therapize, we cannot fix. So we have to find some way of dealing with important issues. Obviously, I from time to time attempt to use humor, which is always dangerous. I remember a friend of ours was writing a book on humor and public speaking and asked my help in a chapter on humor without a victim. There is no humor without a victim. It's either the victim is the teller or the audience or someone else. It's hard stuff, but humor is important. It is the jujitsu where we take those things that frighten us and we make them safe. We spin them back into the world without denying them, but using their own energy to create some kind of epiphany, some kind of learning, some kind of insight. It's one of the reasons that humor is so subversive, because if something's funny, you laugh, and then you judge yourself. You might hate yourself for laughing at something that's utterly vulgar and tasteless, but you've laughed. It's too late. I remember once doing something, and there was a person sitting, it wasn't in this church, so there was a person sitting there that really didn't like me, and I know it's hard to believe, but I'm watching her trying not to laugh. She was just trying not to give me the satisfaction, and I had such a good time watching her go into an asthma attack because she couldn't help it. It cuts through the sensors, but it's dangerous stuff. I mean, today, in today's political correctness, we can't do accents. I mean, I grew up on Myron Cohen, and he is long gone now, but even in the late 50s, when political correctness began to get in the way of humor, which is a terrible thing to do, he would tell a story, and it's one of my favorites. He said, so I was working a show in the Catskills, and I said, in Miami, two Jews get off a streetcar, and a guy in the back of the room gets up and says, Mr. Cohen, why is it always two Jews getting off a streetcar? You couldn't pick on somebody else sometimes? And so Myron Cohen says, so, I said, all right, two Chinese guys get off a streetcar in Miami, and Kung Lao says to Hop Lee, so what are you doing for Passover? Sometimes ethnicity actually fits, and Myron Cohen did accents of the way people spoke. And he got into trouble with the name of Cohen doing Jewish accents. You can only imagine what would happen if he had done Hispanic or Italian or Chinese or any other. I have a rule about doing imitations. And as in most rules, it doesn't always work. I'll imitate a person, whatever their ethnic group, but I'm not going to do an ethnic group that is seen by our society as being disadvantaged. So I'll do an English accent because no one sees the English as particularly disadvantaged, with the exception of cuisine. I'll do a French accent. Again, there really is no problem unless you're doing dentistry jokes. I'll do an Irish accent as long as no alcohol is involved. But I'm not going to do a black accent. I'm not going to do a Hispanic accent. I'm not going to do a gay affect unless it's within a community where that's clearly acceptable. There have been several instances where I've asked permission to do accents, And no is a perfectly good answer. The issue becomes, are you doing it to draw something out, or are you doing it to demean? And as a society, we seem to have forgotten that not all of it is necessarily demeaning when it represents who people are and what our differences are that can be charming or can be used to marginalize people. The use is critical. There was a cartoon in the paper yesterday, and if I were not a writer who lives and dies by copyright protection, I would have duplicated and passed it out from Canderville. Did you see anybody read Canderville yesterday? So the white kid is sitting with the young black man, and the white kid says to the young black man, "You remind me of a presidential candidate." And the black man says, "Yeah, I know. We black guys all look the same." He said, "No, you remind me of McCain. You're old." And, of course, I completely got it, because sometimes you're looking at the wrong thing. When I was starting in comedy, and I was about 16 years old, my routine began, so forgive me if this isn't funny, because I was 16 years old and dinosaurs roamed the earth and pterodactyls took away small children, which for some of us small children was justice. My routine was, you know, you want to get up here and just be funny, but you can't. If you tell rapid-fire jokes, you're imitating Bob Hope. If you wear a sweater and carry a newspaper, you're ripping off Mort Saul. Right onward, more about that later. And God help the poor guy that sits on a stool and tries to carry on a simple conversation, Shelley Berman. You can't stand up, you can't sit down, you can't wear a sweater. The only person I'm safe from being compared to is Bill Cosby. And that's because he's funny. So that was the beginning, because it's looking at the vast categories and then fooling people. Nothing demeaning in that joke. But I'm not sure you could do it today. And that seems to me to be a pity. It seems to me to be a pity that we cannot hear each other with generosity. The latest political game, as all of you know, and this is bipartisanness to its ridiculous extreme, is feigned outrage. Anything that possibly can be construed as negative about age, race, ethnicity, religion, whatever it is, I demand an apology. Never mind the intent. I demand an apology because you've offended my exquisite sensibilities. How do we talk? How do we talk about the very most important things in our world? How do we talk about war and peace, race and reconciliation, social justice and social injustice, without taking the risk of stepping on each other's toes accidentally? Where did we lose as a society the assumption of goodwill? The assumption that the other person is not trying to insult me or demean me, the other person is not trying to mock me, but we're trying to talk about real things. There is a minefield in all of the important social and political conversations of our day. There are code words, and we don't talk straight as a society. We talk around it. There are veiled charges and allusions to what are the issues of McCain's age. What do people really feel about Obama's ethnicity? But it gets recoded as elitism, it gets recoded as not a regular person or a regular person or all kinds of other conversations, because the hot topics, to mix the metaphor, are minefields and third rails, And most people are terrified of stepping on the minefield, of saying the wrong thing, using the wrong words, having our words misconstrued. And so the bottom line of my message today is, to the best that we can, look into the intent of the people with whom we carry on important conversations. Have the courage to try to stretch and to reach around those things that frighten us, that challenge us, to speak our own truths, our own fears, our own hopes, and model the generosity in our listening that we would wish for in our speaking. The words of our joined anthem today could not be better, which is, open up the window and let the dove fly in. Because the very most important question, that may be a slight exaggeration, but one of the most important questions that we face as a society, as a community, in families, with the people we love, with the people we don't love, is, can we talk? And the answer is, we'll see. But generosity at least makes it possible.